Welcome to the Truth Expedition. I'm your host, Mark Bischofsky, and on this program, we dig for tangible, objective truth in this insane world where fact-checkers lie and the government and the media propagandizes you and me, the citizens of this country. Now, I have been blessed week after week to have amazing guests agree to give us some of their time. Our destination is truth, to try to get closer to truth, and this week is no exception. And I believe that we are going to present some of the most important information and facts so far on the Truth Expedition. So this week, I should mention too, if you've not watched my interview with Brooke Jackson, it's very relevant to what we're going to talk about today, and you might want to go back and watch that at some point. But today we've got somebody on the program who's got 25 years of experience in the pharmaceutical industry in research and development, bringing medical devices, pharmaceutical products to market, who understands how the process has been done in the past, how the process should be done, and therefore understands how what was done over the last 3 years with this bioterrorism genocide jab is been done completely differently than it has been in the past. And so today I present to you Sasha Latipova, who, like I said, has worked 25 years in the pharmaceutical industry. Thank you so much, Sasha, for giving us some of your time today.
Yes, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, so let's let the viewers know, so you've been in the industry 25 years, bringing, I think, a lot of cardiovascular products to market, partly involved with that. So what happened in 2020 that made you dig into this?
I worked in pharma in clinical trial space. So I was a contractor. I own several companies that worked for pharma companies, large and small, including Pfizer, performing their clinical trials. And so my expertise was running clinical trials specifically testing, collecting data, submitting it to the FDA. So, and I know Brooke. Brooke is a friend. So she, like, if you think about it, it's a huge process, and she was involved more on the clinical side. What's happening with the patients at the clinical side? My job was, my company did enroll and train the sites to collect the data, but also my primary responsibility was to collect the data, process it correctly, and submit to the FDA and interact with FDA on behalf of the clients. So I'm more like a back end understanding what's happening there and what's happening at the pharma company themselves. When I first started looking into this in 2020, I didn't look at the pharma aspect, although I became more concerned when they started pushing mRNA as a platform for this, because I knew that mRNA was very dangerous. I was concerned that suppression of the early treatments, especially hydroxychloroquine, was happening. And I was familiar with the drug, and I knew specifically the aspects that they were trying to smear it with, which is, there is an issue with drug-induced cardiac arrhythmias, and it's an area of safety testing where I was involved. So I knew everything that there is to know about it, and especially how regulators look at it. And I also knew for sure that hydroxychloroquine doesn't really have that issue, especially when you're thinking about, using it for 7 to 10 days, as opposed to a lifetime treatment, which is how it's normally used today. And I knew that the regulators also knew that, because they have the whole division of FDA dedicated to just this one issue. And when they started coming out and saying that, it's a drug that causes arrhythmias, that it's lethal, producing completely fraudulently manufactured data sets that were later definitively found to be fraudulent, like Surgisphere study, and saying, oh no, look, this drug is causing all these deadly arrhythmias, I knew that they were lying at the time, and I knew that they knew that they were lying. So that was, sometime April, May of 2020. So I became really concerned, and I decided, could not understand how this was possible, because I've never seen FDA engaging in such blatant fraud, blatant, like completely open. anybody professional Could have, you know, even if they were not familiar with this area like myself, and there are, by the way, hundreds and thousands of people involved in this area of research, so they know, and yet still nobody except me spoke up about this. But anyway, so people who are professionals could have looked it up in 5 minutes and figured it out. So today there's absolutely no excuse in saying, oh, I didn't know, you know, it was just so scary. So at that time I understood that I needed to look into data for myself while I still didn't know, you know, how it was possible that FDA was so blatantly lying and knowingly lying. And so that was sort of beginning, and I started looking into VAERS data, at the adverse events and deaths, and specifically by lot numbers, because also, you know, I understand how the pharmaceuticals are made. And that information wasn't VAERS, you know, the lot numbers. And that was, you know, initial analysis that I did. And I also collaborated with Craig Parody-Cooper at that time, who put up this very famous website, How Bad Is Your Batch? So we were, you know, working on it for about a year together. And now, of course, he's running it, and it's extremely successful resource.
Yeah, so lots to dig into there. And for the viewers out there, if you're not familiar, so Lancet, I believe it was a April or May of 2020, The Lancet put out an article, a study presenting fraudulent data. And I don't know if we even know to this day where Surgisphere came up with this. So there's a company called Surgisphere who's, we don't even know who they are, how they came up with this data, but it turned out to be completely fraudulent. And just so you know, Sasha, I was working in a COVID unit. I'm a respiratory therapist at this time. And I'm trying to get doctors to try hydroxychloroquine because I'm seeing Riel in France was using it, and I'm looking at this, and I'm pulling my hair out trying to get these doctors to try it, and they brought up the Lancet study, even after it had come out as a fraud, and I present the fraud to them, and they just kind of go like this deer in the headlights, like they stick with the fraudulent message instead of opening their mind to, no, this is a safe medication. And I think even some of the studies, they were using like really high dosages that might have caused arrhythmias. So everything evolved.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. So Surgisphere, by the way, Sapan Desai, so that data set was completely manufactured. Lancet retracted it in 2 weeks. So they peer reviewed it in 1 day and published it. Then they retracted it in 2 weeks and said, oh, this is fraudulent. Since then, Sapan Desai has been under the Guardian investigated it and found that, well, that was completely manufactured. He had advertised a bunch of associations with Stanford and other, you know, prestigious academic places, who all said we've never heard of his name. His PhD thesis or something is also fraudulent and manufactured. So, and there's been no repercussions, absolutely none. So we have blatant fraud being committed in this huge scale. Remember that study that they were claiming they had thousands and thousands of patients. They had cases of TARSAD recorded on continuous electrocardiograms from Africa. At that point, I was like, this is total lie. I worked with Heart Research Follow-Up Program in Rochester, New York, who collected the world's largest database of long QT, world's largest database for 30 years. They have like four of these recordings. They're so rare. And here we have a study in a few months that has, you know, dozens of these TARSAD cases recorded, okay, and claiming this stuff. I mean, it was just incredible. Then they have the studies that you mentioned, the overdosing, the purposeful overdosing of people with hydroxychloroquine by about 1,000 times the dosage. Those were recovery and solidarity trials funded by Bill Gates. You know, so how blatant does it get? I am with you because I want to smack these people. I want to shake them up and say, when are you going to open your eyes? When are you going to pull your head out of the sand and start looking at reality? Yeah. They just, you know, I don't understand. And this, of course, caused numerous lives of patients who were not properly treated.
Yeah, I mean, because hydroxychloroquine, you can look, the studies show that there's definitely some benefit. I would say quite a lot of benefit. It brings zinc into the cell is one mechanism. It had been used safely for many, many years. It's inexpensive. but yet they choose to push this remdesivir, which failed its Ebola studies, it failed its COVID studies, and they're still using it. They're giving hospitals bonus. If this kind of stuff doesn't ring a bell with you know, and I'm working with doctors. People are dying right in front of me. They couldn't have family at the bedside. I'm holding their hand as they die, and I'm just, what are you thinking? And so that to me was kind of the second thing. I looked in as early as January 2020. I'm hearing about this virus, China, and I just happened to look, coronavirus lab, and I come across Ralph Barrick's 2015 study at North Carolina Chapel Hill, and that's when bells started going off for me, like something's not right here. They're saying it's wild, but in that study, they created a virus chimerically that they were so amazed, this bat virus, where they added a spike to it and how it was so infectious to human lung tissue. And that to me was like, okay, something's really fishy here. I knew immediately that they were going to come up with a vaccine. I could just, with Gates involved and all this, and then the hydroxy and then the ivermectin. It's to me, and I was trained my whole life by my dad to question everything. So I always ask everyone on the program, was this kind of your first red pill, for lack of better words? I mean, for your 25 years in the industry, were you kind of trusting in the process and trusting the government, or have you always kind of had questions about that?
You know, I was trusting the government. That's the biggest problem I was having, that I did trust the government, specifically the FDA. You know, I worked in that industry for a long time. I wouldn't say 100% trusted or blindly trusted, but in my experience, I've never seen them do anything bad or fraudulent, like in front of me or in the project I was involved in. And as I said, I worked especially very closely with cardiovascular safety division, the cardiovascular safety assessment division there, because that was the area where I would need to submit my, you know, clients' data. They had, you know, a fairly large group of people who were interested specifically in cardiovascular safety and how to study it with drugs, you know, what potential problems drugs can have. They were interested in new assessment techniques to identify things early, to not expose people to potentially dangerous medications where we can, like, identify the risk and exclude it, you know, so doing all the right things. You know, so I would say 95% of the time I saw the right things happening in front of me. So I said, well, and in those cases where there was some issue, there was clearly some kind of a process going on to identify, resolve, rectify, you know. So in my experience, it was a regulated industry for a reason. You know, people were trying to do their jobs, everything was going sort of okay. And then we get to this, and I was like, which planet I'm on? But still, you know, historical experience, you know, just because you've seen them do the right thing all the time doesn't mean that when you see them do the wrong thing, you should automatically assume it's not happening. Like, that's not the correct approach, especially something serious like this. Right?
Lives on the line, people dying.
People are dying. We have the country locked down. Children are being, like, abused everywhere with masks and denied education. So this is a serious issue. You know, so if you see something doing something wrong, it's not because it's not happening.
Right. Yeah. Do you say that serious? I mean, probably could end up being one of the most serious, you know, tragic events in modern human history. You could argue.
Absolutely.
what's come of, you know, first they lie about the virus. Was it intentionally released? Who even knows? And then the countermeasures with the lockdowns, the masking, and asymptomatic spread. All these lies, just they're stacking up one after the other. And we still have people with their head in the sands that can't wait for their next booster. Going back to, like, so retrospectively, would you say, looking back, do you, like, for instance, statins? I follow Dr. Mercola, and for many years I've looked at studies where with statins for cholesterol lowering drugs, how they use relative risk and not absolute risk, and how really, when you, if you give 100 people a statin, it's really unremarkable. negligible positive effects. In fact, the side effects from it probably cause more damage than you're getting good. So that and iatrogenic death being the number three cause of death. Iatrogenic, for the folks who don't know, is death caused by doctors or hospitals or the medical system. That was number three in the country before COVID. They kind of removed it from their list now, but I would say it's number one cause of death. But all this stuff was, you know, our food pyramid. We're the sickest country in the world. We lead in heart disease, obesity, diabetes, strokes, all these things. So in my mind, I'm thinking the government doesn't really care, because I think there are things they could have done to make us a healthier a population. But so retrospectively, do you now look back and think some of that stuff was a little sketchy?
Well, yeah, definitely, especially the vaccination. So I totally changed my mind on the childhood vaccination schedule. And I, you know, it's too bad that I didn't know or notice this earlier. I would never have vaccinated my children for anything. That was a huge mistake. That's my personal failure. Like, I should have known better. I should have dug in. But they were also lying so much about it and for so long that preceded, you know, my even getting into the United States for many, many decades. So, so that was probably like the biggest realization for me. The other things, you know, I observed, again, I am a foreigner. I came from a different country. What I observed, extremely unhealthy diets of Americans and what they feed their children. But I was like, look, you know, I am a guest, or immigrant. That's how they decide to feed their children. And again, that's something that I always took as a personal responsibility of adults to figure it out for themselves. It's not the government's job. I knew that there are a lot of commercial interests, obviously, competing and getting their way, but nothing was forced on people other than the vaccination on the children. So all those things, like smoking, drinking, eating bad stuff, taking bad drugs, I thought, you know, adults should be able to figure it out. Not my place to complain here. But the vaccinations, I definitely realized that this was the systematic poisoning program that has been running for, 100 years. That it's on purpose. And this is just a step up in that sort of slow burning poisoning of children. Of course, it causes autism. We have this autism explosion. Yeah,
I was going to ask you that, because they still say it doesn't. And William Thompson brought it up many years ago. And SIDS, would you agree that SIDS is
absolutely
caused by childhood vaccinations? And I'm with you. I regret my children got the minimal amount, because I've been questioning this all along. And we spread them out and we gave the minimal amount, but you know, they're given Hep B vaccination at birth. When a kid can't get this, if the mother doesn't have it, the only way they can get it is with intravenous drug use or sex. And they're putting these
poisons. Or the K shot, same thing.
Right.
And notice that they try to get them right when they're born in the hospital, when the mother is like, so, you know, I just gave birth and I have I can't collect my brain. At that situation, they get them. And now they also do all this genetic screening. What I didn't realize that's happening. You know, somebody just recently asked me that they had a baby, and they were like, well, what is all this stuff that they want me to screen the baby for? And it's, 60 or so, or 200, depending on the state, different genetic conditions that they want to screen newborns also right in the hospital. And what do they find them? Most likely, they say, oh, it's hyperthyroid in a newborn.
Yeah.
And we're going to put them on the thyroid medications right away. And also, this is same as with statins. The overdiagnosis rate is, staggering, like thousands to one, right? So you have to medicate 1,000 children to possibly do something about thyroid, which is completely not proven. Like in the newborn, how are you going to assess that function? They just got here. So that's what they do. They put them on hormones when they're newborns.
Yeah, it's so corrupt. And I'm going to bring this up. I haven't before, and I don't know if a lot of the viewers know, but I had a heart attack in 2017. So I had a tetanus shot. I developed immediately an autoimmune disease, that I know came from this tetanus vaccine, which I didn't even want to get. I had to get it for work. And so I had a heart attack. I'm lucky to be alive. I'm ready to get discharged from the hospital, having a stent placed. And I asked the doctor, the chief cardiologist, should I be changing my diet to like a Mediterranean diet? Should I eat more vegetables, you know, organic? He says to me, there's no data to support that, which is just unbelievable. And then I do change my diet. I lose some weight. I wasn't overweight, but I had a metabolic syndrome. I lost a bunch of weight. I'm feeling great. My labs are perfect. My cholesterol is extremely low. They still want to give it to me. They still want to give it to me. And as it turns out, they have to have a certain percentage of their clients. They're on this to, it's about money. It's so crazy.
Same with the vaccines. Obviously, they get money for each child vaccinated. They get bonuses for, let's say, 100 children in their practice vaccinated. They get further bonuses and upper rates of bonuses if certain percentage of their practice is vaccinated. So this is, and with the COVID vaccines, the same thing. Huge bonuses for subsequent vaccinations, even larger bonuses if you got somebody who hasn't been vaccinated now. So like they're putting bigger price on our heads and our children's heads for those people to chase us.
Criminals. Yeah. It's unbelievable. So before we get into the meat of the matter, what this unbelievable information that you've uncovered, what I've found out after looking into this after the last few years, and you know, conspiracy theorists over the last 20 years have said this to me, but would you agree that this is all kind of a 100-year process where this, the Rockefeller medicine, the vaccine started, they kind of infiltrated the schools, this compulsory education to indoctrinate our youth generation after generation, and big food, big pharma, big school, everything. Do you now believe that this is actually happening in this world?
Absolutely. Well, especially with the healthcare and food, as you know, I've been looking into more of, you know, obviously healthcare situation, but food and also education. You're correct. I mean, I think they're going after all major, you know, major vectors of how society operates. Right. Most important things is, you know, how we bring our children, you know, our health, our schools. Yeah, you know, so yes, they have been, especially with the vaccination program, as I said. I mean, that's been going on hundreds of years. Is this like centrally planned? Yeah, probably. There's probably some sort of a planning or tracking, or you know, and especially how the medicine, like from the medicine standpoint, and that's definitely true with the Rockefellers and that whole system is, you know, remember the medicine was private for all human history. Medicine was private, doctors were private. The payment was directly, you know, patient to the doctor. This was until early 1900s, and in the early 1900s, what did they do? They start coming in and, you know, like early mid, especially that kicked up after the Second World War. So mid 1900s, they start coming in and saying, oh, we can provide insurance, right? So instead of me paying to physician, you know, $25 for a visit, now the insurance comes in to the doctor and says, oh, you can bill $300 for that visit and we will cover it. And so initially they were just doing that, just going to the physicians and saying, you know, if you convert to this insurance model, you can charge, instead of, you know, charging these little fees, now your fees can go up 10 times and we cover everything. And that's how they increase the price of medicine so much that today, like a simple visit, and I've had this happen to me several times. I mean, it's huge. My daughter had like a fracture, a hairline fracture, didn't need a cast. Like she fell off a skateboard. She didn't need a cast. They only gave her like a sling and did an x-ray. And I got the insurance bill. It was $2,000. It was like $2,400. Nobody touched her. She got an x-ray, went to the doctor's office. They looked at the x-ray, said, oh, this doesn't need a cast. and come back in a month.
Yeah,
And it was,
it's all a
you know,
scam.
so yeah, so stuff like that. And so, but they did that by introducing this insurance model where nobody can afford medicine anymore. You have to go to the provider who has the insurance coverage. And then how do they control the doctors? Through insurance, of course. So through the standard of care that now comes down from CDC says every newborn needs to get a hepatitis B and K shot and screened for genetic conditions, and everybody must have COVID shots. And no, you cannot treat hydroxychloroquine. All of this comes down now because the system is captured. That's how they capture the system. And that took a long time. So it's very planned, you know.
It is. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And a perfect example would be LASIK surgery for your eyes. When insurance covered that, it was thousands and thousands of dollars. But when it went to the free market, now you can get LASIK surgery paying cash for a few hundred dollars per eye. So that's a perfect example. My heart attack, I had one night in the hospital, $85,000. I did get a stent placed. So even if you say, you know, I actually played around with the math on this. It should maybe cost $10,000 one night. I mean, maybe you charge a whole lot for that little piece of metal that's in my body, or this expert that's catheterizing me, and having an anesthesiologist there. I mean, $85,000? Where is this money going? And you can't even figure out on your bill what's really happening. And they intentionally confuse us so that they can get away with this garbage.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's just incredible. And that's why, like, for example, there's medical tourism. Like, people go overseas to get like knee replacements or hip replacements, you know, some elective surgery that's not emergency. So you can go to Mexico, stay in like a five-star resort with you know, full service and staff, and it will cost you like a third of what a regular hospital, which will kick you out the next day, by the way, or even the same day. They'll book you in at 4 a.m. and they'll kick you out by 5 p.m.
Yeah.
and then they'll charge you $85,000 or something like that, right?
Yep. And
So
they feed you poison while you're there.
give you poison while you're there and treat you like garbage also, yeah. So
It's unbelievable. So I forgot to do this. So before we go any further, I want you, the viewers, to know how you can follow Sasha. So Sasha's got a Substack, Due Diligence and Art, Sasha Latipova, and also at Twitter you can follow at Sasha underscore Latipova, so it's Latypova. So follow important information coming out. And I also want to mention somebody who you mentioned, Sasha, all the time, and I've begun looking into Catherine Watt, who I think kind of helped you discover a lot of what you've discovered. And you can follow Catherine, and Catherine's got unbelievable Substack too. Bailiwick News on Substack, and that's spelled Bailiwick, Bailiwick News on Substack. So please do follow these important people giving incredible information, truth. This is the Truth Expedition. So let's talk about how this is a government, domestic bioterrorism. How did you uncover this?
Yeah, so that's what Catherine uncovered, actually. So, the as I said, you know, we've digressed into the, you know, into the healthcare disaster that we have. But yeah, so that was my question. Like, how is this possible? Why are the FDA lying so blatantly, and they know that they're lying, and they continue as if there is no repercussions for them or for anybody involved? And that was just mind blowing to me. And so I couldn't understand why until I ran into Catherine's research on Substack, the Bailiwick News site, and she has the most important post everyone should read. It's called "American Domestic Bioterrorism." I think it's a pinned post on her page. And so she discussed. She's a paralegal and a legal researcher, and so she traced the legal structure that's being utilized, or we call it illegal legal structure, that's being utilized to conduct this crime, and it's a global crime. So she identified several congressional statutes, laws that were put in place over a long period of time, starting in the late 60s, actually. So again, this is huge pre-planned attack. And those statutes, while I'm not gonna like cite all of them here right now, but they involve basically so the earlier ones were about biological weapons development. Then later on in the 80s, so the key ones in the 80s was a Public Health Emergency Act, which is basically that's kind of fundamental. It says essentially that Constitution is not absolute. So the US Constitution is not absolute, and there are situations in which it can be suspended. And that's how this whole thing started. So specifically it said that such a thing, a situation, can be described as public health emergency, which qualifies for suspending US Constitution. Then subsequent to that, there were additional acts to solidify this position. One key one is emergency use authorization. That was in the 90s. And then more recent, I forget, it's 2001 or 2002, was actually, I think they put it in place right after the anthrax attacks. So the anthrax attacks, which were purposeful false flags, specifically to blackmail members of Congress into approving this, into pushing this forward. One Congress member, I believe, was killed with laced anthrax, and that was enough to send a message to the rest of them to comply with this terrorist threat, essentially from CIA, to approve this sort of final piece of the puzzle, which was another public health emergency, the one that put the pandemic preparedness plan in place and created the whole new division, new office of Assistant Secretary of Pandemic Preparedness and Response, from where all this countermeasure nonsense originates now. And that also put in place what's called public health emergency, I forget the total, the complete name, but it's called Public Health Emergency Enterprise in the US government. And it's an interagency cabal where 10 federal agencies participate, including, HHS, FDA, NIH, Department of Energy, Department of Agriculture, Veterans Affairs, DOD, obviously. So there are 10 federal agencies that call this, it's called PAMC Enterprise, where they all participate. They can share information secretly, don't disclose it. They can appropriate money. They can develop countermeasures. Don't tell anybody what they are. Don't disclose IP. Keep it, totally secret. And that's kind of how this whole thing. And they're using emergency use authorization. They're using this Public Health Emergency Act that announces that we have a public health emergency. By the way, that announcement is entirely up to HHS say so. They can declare it based on anything, based on an identified pathogen or a potential pathogen of, and now they've expanded it to such a degree that it's completely nonsensical. It's not just human, it's, for example, they have a plant virus that they found. That means that they can announce public health emergency based on that.
So total control, yeah.
It's totally, it's completely... The only way I can describe it is a huge international mafia, because it's not just our government. Obviously this spans the globe. I mean, they're all behaving this way, and they're all reporting to WHO, UN, all those globalist cabals. But anyway, so in the US, it's implemented this way, and obviously this has been pre-planned, because I'm citing new law from what Catherine traced from decades back. But anyway. Now the situation is HHS can declare public health emergency whenever they feel like it. As COVID was announced by WHO based on 40 cases worldwide that came from China, based on China say-so, based on fraudulent PCR, all this nonsense, based on killing people in the hospitals with remdesivir and then calling it COVID. So they announced it. Then HHS announces it. Once they announce it, this whole thing kicks into gear, where now nobody can unannounce it. Even, you know, what Biden just revoked is not actually the HHS pronouncement. It's just the president's public health emergency announcement. The HHS one is still in place. They still have the potential, and actually they put the word in potential, so they can still control the country if there is a potential. And then they're also using, and they solidified PrEP Act like crazy. I mean, there's been 10 amendments to it. Catherine actually sent me the most recent one. I haven't looked at it yet, but so they're using this whole machinery saying, we can announce public health emergency. We can tell you what it's based on. You don't have to know. We don't have to prove anything. There are no data, no criteria, no like infectivity or cases or deaths, nothing. None of this is necessary. It's just what Javier Becerra decides. Okay, he doesn't have to take into consideration any data. Then this whole PMC enterprise, which is militarized, it's driven by the military, and it's military plus HHS, you know, as science advisors and NIH, they create countermeasures whichever way they please. They're not pharmaceuticals, they're not vaccines, they're not medical devices or treatments or anything. They're just countermeasures. They don't have to be regulated by any laws. Actually, no pharmaceutical laws apply. So that's the biggest lie that people were told, and people still believe, and doctors still believe. They still believe that when Rochelle Walensky, who is a criminal, wasn't sworn into her office, didn't have proper affidavit. On her affidavit, it says she's not director of CDC, she's senior advisor. She since then left. She was impersonating a regulator for a few years to do this. And so is Robert Califf, by the way. He's not sworn in. Janet Woodcock is not sworn in. So they're impersonating regulators, and they're coming out and they're saying, oh, you know, we have reviewed and we FDA, falsely representing FDA, we FDA reviewed and approved these vaccines. They're vaccines, and they're very safe and effective. And all of this is a lie. They're not FDA. They're misrepresenting regulators. They're misrepresenting that these are medical products, and they're misrepresenting that this any regulatory process applied to them at all.
Yeah,
it didn't.
Unbelievable. So yeah, just so that's a lot to unpack there. But basically, the vaccines, we all know, anyone watching this program knows these vaccines aren't vaccines. They had to change the definition of a vaccine, but they're not even, they're military countermeasures. And that's kind of the meat of the subject here. And we're going to talk about this thing called other transaction authority, and how the so-called vaccines were never even subject to trials, really, in reality. It was all theater, and that's how the Brooke Jackson case comes into this. And so can you explain a little bit of that, a little clearer, like how it's a countermeasure defined by the Department of Defense and other transaction authority?
Yeah, so countermeasures, as I said, is something, a word that was introduced when they put in place that whole public health emergency office and pandemic preparedness enterprise, which was in early 2000s, right after anthrax attacks. So that's the word that came into vocabulary then, and it's a military term. It really does not mean anything. It's just a cover for a whole bunch of things that they feel like doing, typically militarized and some sort of attacks. By classifying these things countermeasures, they remove them completely in legal meaning from pharmaceutical research and development laws. So we have in the United States and worldwide, there's huge amount of laws and regulations that's built for consumer protection. And it applies to food and drugs and cosmetics too, actually. All those laws and this humongous body of it that the pharmaceutical, anybody participating in the pharmaceutical industry has to comply with. I was subject to that. I had to comply. And that's why I know that this, you know, this is in place. It applies to production, traceability of ingredients, the labeling especially, you know, so if you're saying that you have so much of this ingredient in your pill or vial or whatever, you have to be able to prove it. You have to be able to demonstrate that each one of them actually is validated, and you know, whichever one you pick off the shelf, you can then show, oh, this vial was made on this production line with these ingredients from these suppliers to these raw materials. And if anything goes wrong, I can go back and retrace it. So that's how its whole thing is designed. Countermeasures do not fall into this whole area at all. By law, they're separate from it. And in fact, it says, you know, that's what Catherine Watt found, which was the critical piece. There's a part of U.S. code or U.S. law that applies to the emergency use authorized countermeasures, which is what these things are. What they're calling vaccines, calling safe and effective, is none of it. It's emergency use authorized countermeasure that under public health emergency does not fall into any clinical investigation practice or any clinical investigation law. And if something cannot be a clinical investigation product or device or drug, then no clinical trial regulations apply or any pharmaceutical compliance regulations apply. And in fact, it's cited in all of the contracts, in FDA documents, in FDA guidance even for these vaccines, that these are countermeasures. So they're in fact telling us the truth in if you read the law. But who reads the law? Catherine?
Yeah. You know?
And actually, I retrace all this. So you can find it, and it's black and white. It's very clear. So when people start, you know, trying to get some sort of legal recourse and go and try to sue for, you know, damages, for deaths, for safety, for all of these things, they run into a wall of this legal cage. Okay, so they build this legal cage, violating Constitution. But the Congress allowed them to do that because they threatened Congress members with anthrax, obviously. So people don't understand that these countermeasures do not have to go through clinical trial testing at all. And whatever Janet Woodcock says on the media and Peter Marks and whoever comes and says we've reviewed and approved them, well, that's a lie. That's theater. They're misrepresenting. They're impersonating regulators when they say so.
Unbelievable. So, do we even know who's making these so-called vaccines? I mean, you got Pfizer, mm-hmm. BioNTech, and then Fosun Pharmaceuticals is a Chinese pharmaceutical manufacturer, mm-hmm. or is it just the Pfizer and Moderna label on these? Do we even know?
Yeah, it's not clear. It's not entirely clear where they're made, except I for sure know that they're made by defense contractors under defense contracts, and these contracts go back years, so way preceding COVID. In fact, I have evidence, including video recordings and audio recordings, saying that, contractual evidence that Department of Defense structured hundreds of these relationships with various pharmaceutical biotech companies and academic institutions to create under this pandemic preparedness cabal, PEMC enterprise, since 2001, they've established this huge manufacturing base that was ostensibly for making vaccines and making influenza, pan-influenza vaccines. And the reason they gave stated reason was, well, because this is a niche thing, it's in case we have a bioweapons attack, which never happened, by the way, unless CIA does it themselves. If we have a bioweapons attack, then we need to have these vaccines and storage of these medical products. And so that's why we're hiring all these companies to create this manufacturing base. So this has gone on for years. Then on February 4th, all of them received a call from Colonel Matt Hepburn from, I believe he was at DARPA at the time. So he called them all and he said, oh, now you're switching to COVID. It's a go. That's how the, but th this machinery is in place, and in fact it includes a lot of secret defense contractors, and it includes also a lot of pre-manufactured substances in storage. And under this whole other transaction authority contracting mechanism that they're all participating in this, it also provides a lot of secrecy. It's a method for Department of Defense to contract with private manufacturers, avoiding all regulations that apply to those private manufacturers, and also keep it all secret. And the distribution of these products is also controlled by the Department of Defense. It's not licensed pharmacy distributors, although, they hired McKesson to be that, but McKesson, under this contract, other transaction authority for countermeasures, does not have to comply with pharmacy distribution laws or regulations. So now they're working for the Department of Defense as a contractor, keeping it all secret, keeping it a black box distribution system into which they can introduce any materials from any supplier in the world, including China, or take it from storage, stuff that they've pre-manufactured since 2001.
Yeah, in fact, I uncovered so advanced, and this is all stuff I've learned since I discovered you, Sasha, and Catherine Watt. Advanced Technologies International, I believe, is a South Carolina company. There's a contract in 2016 where they got a ton of money having to do with this pandemic, which obviously they knew was coming. It's unbelievable when you dig into this. And so I want to just touch on something. The product variability, I think that's something really important that you had brought up about how, again, these things are not really getting any trials because from one vaccine or whatever injection to the next, they're completely different, correct? The amount of mRNA or DNA or heavy metals that are in these things, just completely variable.
Yeah, there's a huge variability that that was my first analysis that I was doing in VAERS. I have uncovered humongous variability, lot to lot. So I was looking by lots, but I think the lots of these products or batches are so huge. They may be composed of different sub batches as well, but that wouldn't be visible in VAERS. But anyway, so what I was finding, even at that large level of batches, we saw humongous variability. So some had, two or three reports, maybe 10 reports of adverse events, and some had thousands and had hundreds of deaths in them. And so you have this humongous distribution that's completely unacceptable for any pharmaceutical product. That's how I knew early on in 2021 that these products were not manufactured to good manufacturing practices. At that time, I was like, how are they doing this? How is this even possible? Why nobody is stopping it? Because we have so many layers of law enforcement that is also designed to detect these kinds of things and stop them and do the product recalls, which happen all the time, right? Not for this. So that was my big question. Why is this happening? Now, more recently, there have been a lot of data that came out from people directly testing vials all over the world, and I'm in touch with a few groups that do that or have done it and published. And also some additional research was published recently on the batch variability. But anyway, from the direct testing of vials, we know that they're all over the place as far as what's found in them, but nothing so far has been found corresponding to the labeling. So they're completely mislabeled. So on the label, it says, these ingredients in these quantities, nothing like that was found. But what people find is huge variability of stuff. Sometimes there is RNA and DNA, sometimes there isn't. Sometimes they find, actually, pretty much always when they tested this, they found heavy metals and toxic metals of variety of metals like aluminum, thulium, cesium, gadolinium, antimony, mercury, lead, cobalt, all sorts of things are found in those vials. The substance itself is a hydrogel. I'm pretty sure I've recently started looking more into this. I'm pretty sure it's so-called DARPA hydrogel, which is made by MIT. Which is a defense, has been defense and CIA shop for a long time. And a specific lab at MIT, Robert Langer is head of it, and he's the most interesting chemist in the world, because he's invented so many things. I mean, it's staggering. He has 1,400 patents. He co-founded 40 companies, just him alone. Okay, and you know, so that just you start questioning, like, how is somebody so brilliant at MIT? Anyway, so he is in charge of this lab that makes these hydrogels, loaded with all sorts of things, including RNA and including chemicals, which is consistent with what we're finding. Also, by the way, works with, you know, how to make them release certain components of this hydrogel on demand using electromagnetic frequencies. So, you know, I advise people look up Robert Langer at MIT. It's a fascinating place. It has a lot of publications also on this matter, and patents. He's a co-founder of Moderna, by the way, himself. And his name is all over the patents of Moderna and Pfizer and all the associated nanotechnology IP is related, and it very frequently has his name on it. Anyway, so that's one aspect. When people find RNA and DNA, which has been found in few cases that I know of, they also find it is hugely contaminated. So RNA is fragile, it's not stable. So when RNA is found, it's found in pieces that never correspond to the sequence that it's supposed to be, but they have all sorts of other shorter, longer sequences, a lot of short ones. Short ones are not benign, they can interfere, and that these are the ones that are used for gene knockout or gene silencing, for example, in animal models. So RNA is just broken into pieces, like shrapnel, you know, completely unpredictable. And then DNA, and this is Kevin McKernan recently found, so he's a genomics expert in Boston, and he's tested both Pfizer and Moderna and found that it's hugely contaminated with plasmid DNA, which is the plasmid DNA is the first step of manufacturing of RNA, and obviously it's not being removed because it's like 100 to 1,000 times over the limits that are prescribed for DNA, you know, acceptable limits for these products. And so it's huge amounts of DNA, and specifically, so there are just strands of DNA, which is problematic, but maybe not as much problematic as having circular DNAs, which is plasmid DNA, because that's very stable, and that can transfect your gut bacteria. So when Pfizer is actually advertising on their website, you can see, oh, you will become a bio factory or something like that. You know, there's this factory, and then, you know, people getting vaccinated. Oh, you will be making your own new, you know, genetic materials. Well, that's what they mean, actually.
Yeah.
Because the DNA is grown in plasmids in E. coli cells. So that's a manufacturing, you know, they have these vats of E. coli bacteria, and they introduce these circular pieces of DNA. It's called plasmid, coded for whatever they need it coded for. And then it's because E. coli replicate very quickly. So over, you know, a few days, you can grow like huge amount of it and then harvest it. So that's, but that same thing can happen in your gut because you have your own E. coli. And they will be doing that once they get the circular pieces of DNA. And by the way, that circular piece of DNA contains two antibiotic resistance genes for antibiotics and kanamycin and neomycin, which are used for treating antibiotic resistant tuberculosis, with which they're bringing the migrants in now over the southern border. So half of them are TB positive. And so anyway, so that's going on. And then also he found a cancer promoter gene in the same circular plasmid DNA, SV40. It's not the whole gene, but it's the promoter part, which is kind of like amplifier. So if it incorporates in front of a particular, wrong gene, right, it will amplify it. So it's a known cancer causing mechanism. So that's what's being found. all sorts of things. And as I'm saying, the manufacturing base of it is huge. International has been built for 20 years by the Department of Defense and their allies in all over the world. And they also manufactured a lot of stuff into storage. And the system that's being put in place is a black box, so they can at any time either produce something new or take something from storage. And so that's why we see this huge variability, and people are having a gigantic variety of symptoms. All kinds of deaths are happening, and they're all saying, oh, it's just COVID causing all of this.
Right. Yeah, it's just all long COVID. And we are seeing a huge increase in cancers and really rapidly growing cancers, where it's just like I've seen some instances where kid goes to the hospital with a headache, gets diagnosed with leukemia, and is dead in 4 hours. So we know, mm-hmm. and there were warnings early on by good doctors that were getting ignored, cancered, and censored, saying that we're going to see a huge increase in cancer. But if you are somebody who did submit to this jab, hopefully you got one of, because what is it about 30-35% of the batches or lots are causing about 90%+ of the negative side effects? Would you say that's about accurate?
Yeah, that's about accurate. But, you know, as I said, the batch level analysis is too high level. So we can't say what's happening in between. And the batch sizes have gigantically increased over time. And in fact, now Pfizer went to what's called continuous manufacturing, which is completely against any pharmaceutical regulation laws, but they're doing it anyway. I mean, not, you know, it's a huge crime, so nothing is stopping them. So they've gone to lots, which the last one I, my data stops, by the way, a year ago. This was what was FOIA'd by RNCRI and ICANN. We haven't gotten shipment data since, but that data shows that there were lots in the United States distributed. There were 12 million doses. You know, that's huge. And since, and that lot was produced over 6 months and has multiple expiration dates and was shipped, you know, all over the United States. So we don't know what's, you know, I can look at the 12 million dose level, but I don't know what's happening within. You know, a lot of them seem to be benign as far as, you know, they may be, because they're so huge, they may be over diluted. It's likely that the level of adverse events and deaths was kept at such a level to be able to gaslight people as long as possible, which is what's going on. So you know, if they were injecting everyone with straight poison, then, you know, there would be a quick resistance and people would realize what's going on. But now, you know, they can have 5-6 injections and get no side effects, and they say, oh, you're crazy conspiracist. So that's how this is going. So for people who don't have any side effects, well, good for you. I'm very happy. Stop getting any injections. Don't do it again. It's like a Russian roulette. Like, don't keep playing it.
Yeah, I want to say, so you mentioned RNCRI, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure if you're aware, but he just won another case against the FDA to get the Moderna trial data. So Moderna wanted to hide their, so RNCRI had won to get the, against the CDC to get the VSafe data released, and he won against the FDA to get the, and this is against the government, not against the, this should also tell you that this is the government, DOD. He's winning mm-hmm. cases against the government to get data released, not the pharmaceutical companies. But so he just, Moderna wanted to hide their data for 25 years. Now they have 2 years to spill this data out. Why do they want to hide it? But I also want to plug this too. We have RNCRI coming to an event on September 10th. So tickets just went live for that. TempoTickets.com/RNCRI. So come and see Aaron. That's going to be amazing. One thing I do want to ask though, as we're on this topic, is there graphene? Is there graphene in these jabs?
The problem is that I don't have any direct evidence of it. So there's a circumstantial evidence, but there's no direct evidence that I have seen that I can say, okay, that's definitive. I mean, there is some preliminary analysis I've seen. You know, you could say, well, it could be, but somebody needs to take that same material to another lab, validate it. And the problem with identifying graphene is there are very, very few labs in the world that can do it, and also very few experts in the world that can do it, and they're all on defense contracts. So That's the problem we're having. Now, there have been a lot of like sort of false information circulated also, and maybe on purpose. For example, a Pfizer report was circulated saying, oh, this is evidence of graphene. It's not evidence of graphene. I read that report. I actually wrote an article on Substack about it. That was an imaging study. So the graphene was used like an imaging prep, not a vaccine ingredient. It's just a, just when some report says graphene oxide doesn't mean it's an ingredient of vaccine. It was used for cryogenic imaging of spike proteins that they have synthesized. It may indicate that graphene has some kind of a property, insulating property that they need with the spike protein, which means maybe they're also using it to put it into the vials, but that report didn't say that. So I can't tell you that this is evidence. There's sufficient amount of criminality without graphene. So I don't understand why people are so obsessed about it.
Right, and that's something I kind of let go of because I hear there's definitive evidence that there is, and then there's not, and then there is, and then there's not. And this whole thing about the frequencies, is 5G playing some kind of a role? And that gets to, you know, really into conspiracy theory there. And, you know.
Well, for frequencies, look, you know, I advise anybody who's interested in that matter, look at Robert Langer online, is gazillion publications, and that's his area of research, and he's in charge of it, and he's a co-founder of Moderna. So if I were looking into frequencies, and I'm not an electrical engineer, so I have less knowledge about it, but go look there, read there, maybe you'll find something. And I think that's a valid area of questioning, because now we have a direct here. He's a co-founder. He's on all of their patents, and he's talking about this. So, you know, let's look into that.
Yeah, we all have a role to play here, and there's so much to uncover. Not one person can do it. I only have so much time in a day. I'm looking at excess death, and we need other people to dig into these things.
Yeah.
So I guess we're running almost out of time here. One last question. What do you predict? Do you think anyone's going to go to jail, to prison, get executed for this? Do you think we're going to see massive amounts of death, even more so from these cancer? I mean, what do you think the next 1, 2, 3 years is going to bring, Sasha?
I mean, I don't know. I can't predict the future. And this is a very uncertain time, which means both, you know, it's danger and opportunity for us to recapture the whatever governance we have left, any lawful governance that we have left. The federal government, forget it. At the federal government, nothing. They're completely captured. They're all criminal. You know, they're like 90 some percent of them are criminal, because either they are complicit like our Congress and just sitting, you know, on their thumbs and, you know, doing some hearings and here and there and saying things on Twitter, but nothing is going to happen there. Federal judges not going to do anything. You've seen, you know, Judge Drunkhale basically confirmed everything that I just said about the criminality of it, how it's laid out. I mean, he didn't say it was bad. He just agreed with all of the FDA and government statements and said Brooke Jackson should go away. But he confirmed everything that I said. So that tells us that the federal judges are gone. You're not going to see any justice there. The only potential place for us to defend is local. I'm going to I've been invited to a few local county commissioners hearings, you know, and they don't make laws, but they can put in resolutions, which mean kind of a lot of things, especially to the local sheriffs. So I would, you know, encourage people to go talk to your local county commissioners, your local sheriff. Figure out how you're going to defend your town, your street, your city, because that it comes to that point. At the state level, you know, there's some, you know, things here and there. DeSantis says he's going to do a grand jury. Nothing is happening. They keep killing people with COVID protocols in Florida hospitals. He has done nothing about it. So I don't have a lot of faith in DeSantis. Or, you know, like Ken Paxton recently said he's going to do investigation. Well, we'll see. Hopefully. So, I mean, it can happen, like an AG at a state level can do something about it, or governor can do something about it. But I am more, saying people figure out how to defend your street, your town, your city. It's gonna be it, we're gonna be lawless and mafia overrun for some time now.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. There's really going to be no legislative remedy, probably not a judicial remedy. This is going to come down to noncompliance, civil disobedience, and beyond if we're going to defend ourselves. And
Say no. Say no, stand up to the criminals. I mean, at least we're all armed.
right.
I mean, Europeans don't have that. So we gotta understand what's going on, and we have to defend our children. And when you go interact with this criminal hospital system or your doctor who's pushing jabs on you, well, tell them that. Tell them this. I mean, they should hear this.
Yeah, that's another thing. We have to continue to tell the truth and be loud and be courageous and be unafraid because it's really up to us. We can't count on our government. Like Sasha said, they are criminals. It's a cabal. It's been overrun. We can't count on them. It's up to you and I, the people, to defend our liberty in this, what used to be the greatest country in the world. I don't know anymore. So, what an amazing.
I still think it is the greatest country in the world. We just have to find it within ourselves to bring it to that place. And it's up to us, up to every single one of us.
Yeah, it's still the beacon, people still want to come to the United States of America, so we have to fight. And this has been what an incredible. I'm so grateful, Sasha. I'm so grateful for your time today, and this has been an incredible conversation. I think we got to the meat of the matter. We started out talking about some related stuff, but more your history and the pharmaceutical scam. But yeah, maybe again maybe it's in some point in the future, we'll see what happens with Brooke Jackson, but maybe I could have the both of you on sometime in the future. And I know Brooke too. She's a hero of mine, and so are you, Sasha. So
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to.
thank you so much, and thank you for tuning in to the Truth Expedition. Stay free, don't shed on me, and don't tread on me.